From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. There's big news out of Europe on climate change policy. First, the Labour government of the UK, led by Tony Blair, has formally filed legislation that would cut Britain's global warming gases by 60% by the year 2050. The bill has yet to be enacted, but under the British parliamentary system, such a majority measure almost always becomes law. In the meantime, a summit meeting of the European Union has led to a commitment to reduce the EU's total global warming gases by at least 20% over 1990 levels within 13 years, raising the ante from the EU's more modest commitment under the Kyoto Protocol. The moves put the UK and the other 26 countries of the European Union onto a much faster track toward a new energy economy, and it puts them far ahead of the world's largest contributors to global warming, countries like the US and China. Joining us to discuss these developments is Vijay Vaidheswaran. He's a correspondent for The Economist magazine. Vijay, thanks for joining us.
Hello there. Good to be with you.
So what did the EU decide to do?
The gathered heads of state from across Europe agreed on a plan for greenhouse gases that goes beyond the current Kyoto Treaty, which is about to expire. And they also agreed on targets for renewable energy, on biofuels for the transportation sector. And they even talked a little bit about if the rest of the world, which is subtext for the United States, gets on board, they might even have a plan for the next round of Kyoto, how to go even further ahead on tackling climate change.
All right, let's look at those. What's their plan to go forward for the next round of Kyoto if the United States can get engaged?
Well, if the world joins on board, and the U.S. will insist China does something, so you can say in a way those are the two litmus tests, Europe is ready to cut its greenhouse gas emissions by 30% below the level they were at in the 1990s. Now, what they say is even if the U.S. does nothing, they're still going to cut by 20% over the course of the next 15 years, by 2020.
Early on, it was pretty easy for countries like the U.K. to say they were going to reduce emissions below 1990 levels because, in fact, they had already. But nowadays, the EU is a lot bigger. You've got states like Poland and the Czech Republic that are using a lot of very cheap coal and oil and aren't particularly set up to meet the goals of this EU proposal. How are they going to be able to fit into this?
Well, you asked absolutely the right question. The key is coal, just as it is in looking at the global climate picture. And when you look at Eastern Europe, Poland, for example, was very vocal at the summit, as were some of the East European countries that rely a lot on dirty fuels. They said, look, we're poor, we need to grow, and we have lots of domestic coal. And equally important, we don't want to become reliant on Russian gas imports, for example. And so what they got the richer, more environmentally minded Western European countries to agree was a language that said all of Europe will embrace a target of 20% renewables by 2020, but we won't dictate to individual countries what their target should be. And that allows them some wiggle room.
So to what extent are industries really in place to support these kinds of goals over the next dozen or so years?
The technologies are there. There's no question. Denmark, for example, is the world leader in the wind industry. We have Germany is now the world's largest market for solar, thanks to massive subsidies, of course. And we have, if you want to talk about a very controversial low-carbon technology, France is probably the world's leader on nuclear power, which they managed to sneak into this treaty as a footnote. We might even see this treaty unravel in a way if the definition of renewable goes the way that France wants, so that renewables include nuclear power. But all this goes to say that they have a multiplicity of technologies available. The real question is, how expensive will they be? They're going into the unknown. There's good reason to think that the cost will not be high, that they'll build new industries. Europe could even be the world leader in many of these fields. But you can't prove that before the fact, so it is something of a risk.
Now, what about the UK's move? This call for a 60% reduction by 2050 has been announced as a goal, but now there's an actual tangible bill to do this. What does that bill exactly entail?
I think Tony Blair is the unheralded hero of the fight against climate change. I think history will be very much kinder to him on this than it is at the moment. But this new bill is actually the most important piece of his legacy because it translates into law, assuming the bill is passed, specific five-year plans, carbon budgets that would be drafted by independent board of experts. Imagine something like the Federal Reserve Bank in the U.S. They would say, what is a reasonable target for Britain in the next 5 years? And Britain would pass it into actual laws with teeth. And more than 5 years out, they would actually pass the next 3 5-year plans, meaning business would have 15 years of legal certainty. I mean, that is astonishing. That's money in the bank as far as industry is concerned, because the thing that's holding up investment in green energy more than anything else is uncertainty. Businesses can't invest in a power plant when you don't know, for example, what Washington's going to do. And so businesses actually hate uncertainty even more than they hate regulation. And what Tony Blair's new bill, assuming it goes into law at some point, will give Britain a dramatic advantage and give British industries a dramatic advantage in entering a low-carbon age.
In sum, then, Vijay, this summit of the EU leaders and the British bill, what does it mean in the broad picture?
I think this really sets the stage for how we will look beyond Kyoto to a more sensible global round of international climate negotiations. Germany has the presidency of the European Union at the moment and will also be chairing the very important G8 summit, which includes, of course, the United States. And the Chancellor of Germany has made it very clear she's putting a lot of political clout on the line, and especially given that her own car companies are very reluctant to do this, she's showing great political courage. And I think that actually moves the bar and makes it hard for President Bush and any future American administration to continue to do so little on climate change.
Vijay Vaidheswaran is a correspondent in Washington for The Economist. Thank you so much, sir.
It's a great pleasure.